Today is August 3rd, year 2008, and it's the 12th Sunday after Pentecost. On the epistle, what we're reading today is St. Paul's talking about the supremacy of the new covenant over the old covenant. And he's talking about how glorious it was when Moses went up to the mountain and got the Ten Commandments and came down, and his face was all shining on glory. And the people couldn't barely look upon his face. And he called that the, here's the word he uses. He says, now he calls it the ministrations of death. And what he means by that was the old covenant error was to make people, even the whole Old Testament error, was to make the people aware of the fact that they've committed grievous sins against God, that they need to ask for forgiveness, and that they're guilty also of the Adam and Eve's original sin, and that they're being made aware of the fact that they have committed sins that put them under the death sentence, and that would have been eternal if it wasn't for Christ to come. So the whole purpose is to teach the people, you are under the death sentence, and here's what you need to do to be forgiven and eventually redeemed when Jesus Christ comes. That's why they call it the ministration, he calls it in here, the ministration of death or of condemnation. Even when Jesus came the first time, to redeem man, he was preaching. And he says, I came not to condemn the world, but to save the world. He said, why did Jesus say he came not to condemn the world? He said, because it was already condemned. He would just be repetitious. He says, I don't need to re-condemn it. The world's already been condemned. I am the one who came to redeem it and to show you now, to actually give redemption to all the just men and women that lived under the Old Testament era, and then to offer the redemption to all the people that are living in the New Testament era. So St. Paul's speaking about the supremacy of the New Covenant as opposed to the Old. Everything that took place in the Old Covenant was a preparation for the coming of Christ and the New Covenant. So that when Christ came, he ended the old and he replaced it with the new, which now offered redemption to mankind, and which mankind would be redeemed. And so when anybody ever tries to say that the old covenant is still in effect, it's a complete denial of Jesus Christ and the new covenant. You're saying Christ didn't come yet. And you're still in your sins, as St. Paul said, because the Redeemer, you don't believe he came. And there's even, here what's even worse than that is, you think there's going to be another Redeemer who's going to come, who we know is really going to be the Antichrist, and he can't redeem you. The Redeemer already came, and if you don't accept Christ, there is no redemption. I speak to this to all the Jews and all you people that are being deceived by the apostate Jews who are going to go follow their Antichrist, who's going to pretend to redeem men. The redemption already happened. He's talking about how much greater is the ministration that of Christ himself, the lawgiver, who came down in flesh and took on our human nature, than the Ten Commandments that were on stones given to Moses on the top of Mount Sinai. So this 2 Corinthians 3:4-9 is talking about the greatness. For people who are listening to this sermon may not have read it, so I'll just read it for you. It says, brethren, such confidence we have. It's 2 Corinthians 3:4-9. Brethren, such confidence we have through Christ towards God, not that we are sufficient to think anything of ourselves, as of ourselves, but our sufficiency is from God. First, he's in all humility acknowledging that he can't do anything without God, let alone do anything good. Even the pagan on the island who doesn't even know the true God or anything, God keeps him alive and gives him his next breath and his next step, if he only knew. That's God's mercy, even working in the pagan. Let alone do anything good without God. So God gives us life, he gives us breath, he gives us strength, he gives us the good thoughts. All the bad thoughts and evil things come from the temptations of the devil and from our own evilness. That doesn't come from God. But without God, you can't even be breathing. You wouldn't even be walking, you wouldn't even be able to think a good thought. And so St. Paul's acknowledging that whatever good I have in me came from God, and it's God who sustains me. He says, who also have made us fit ministers of the New Testament, not in the letter, but in the Spirit. For the letter killeth, but the Spirit quickeneth. This is against all the jurisdictional Pharisees that are so harping on the letter of certain laws and cannot see the spirit of the law. What good is to, you'd be nothing like more than a computer that can pump out some type of a statement but has no feelings, no emotions, doesn't know the reason for the law, doesn't love the law. He just obeys it because he was told to obey it, and he wants to look good in the eyes of other people, maybe because he wants to be famous, he wants to be prosperous, he wants to look religious. But if he doesn't really keep the law because he loves God and because he loves it, it's all false. It's just letter of the law, no spirit of the law. The heart of the law is always the spirit. That's why St. Paul says you can have faith to move mountains. If you don't have charity, you don't have God. You don't have nothing. You're damned. He means the true love of the law. These jurisdictional Pharisees don't have the true love of the law, and that's why they don't have true wisdom. And as a result, they can't even really interpret the true meaning of the law. That's why you get so many twisted interpretations of the law. Here he's condemning the jurisdictional Pharisees of our day, like Patrick Henry, Father Agrigi, Sister Cabrini. Who else do we have out in that arena? There are some of the main gang leaders. And there's other ones out there to different degrees. Also, some of the main gang leaders are the jurisdictional Pharisees that I tell you people to avoid. And it's not just them. It doesn't have to just do with Epikaya issues. It has to do with understanding even the letter, what is the spirit of his moral laws and faith laws that can never change? What is the spirit behind that law? Can you not see the spirit behind the law of adultery? Why you don't do that? Because that's wicked and mean. Would you want someone to do that to your wife and take your wife? So then how come you took another man's wife? You see, the spirit of that law is that that's just a wicked, abusive, nasty, one of the most vicious things you can ever do to your neighbor is to steal his wife. And for the wife to allow that to happen herself, it's the biggest insult against her husband. These are things natural law can even tell you. Now, somebody might say, I'm just keeping that law because God told me to keep it. I don't know why. I don't know why we can't do it, but God said we can't do it, so therefore I'm not going to do it. There's a man that has no idea of the concept of the spirit of that law. He may still be keeping that law by not committing adultery,
but if he doesn't understand the spirit of the law,
he undermines everything. He doesn't know the real reason. And eventually you'll get a guy like that committing mortal sins. Even in this other verse today, Jesus says a lot of this thing is love God above all things and your neighbor as you treat your neighbor as you would yourself. It says, now if the ministration of death engraveth with letters upon stones was glorious, so that the children of Israel cannot steadfastly behold the face of Moses. He's saying the Ten Commandments was glorious when it was revealed to them. And that wasn't even the living God. Moses saw God, but they didn't. Moses just saw the backside of God. Never saw his face. God, but Moses spoke directly to God. Like you and I are speaking right now in this room, a conversation. But they didn't. They saw the Ten Commandments that came down, that God wrote on those tablets of stone. And he's saying, if that was glorious, indeed it was, because when he came down from the mountain, was in the presence of God, his whole being was shining out with the glory of God. He's going to go on and say, how much more glorious is Jesus Christ, who was the one who gave Moses the law on Mount Sinai? That was Christ who gave him the law. It's God, the lawgiver in the flesh that you can talk and speak to. How much more glorious is Christ than Moses? Here he is again talking to these stupid Jews. All you dummies, if you believed in Moses, you should have believed in me because Moses wrote about me. Moses yearned for my day. In the gospel, he's even talking about how Moses and all the Old Testament prophets look forward to the day of the Redeemer. The day that you now, Jesus says, are looking upon me now. And you're treating me so shabbily. When if these men were around, they would have been, they're glorying in that day. He even said that Abraham did see my day. Because don't doubt the fact that this information was already spread in Abraham's bosom. They all knew about it. You know, they were kept aware of what was going on the face of the earth. When people were dying and going into Abraham's bosom, they'd be able to report to them what was going on earth. And I believe even the angels were going down and giving some news reports. Transfiguration, we're going to celebrate coming up this week. Elias and Moses appeared on Mount Tabor with Jesus, right? And then they went right back down and told the brothers, hey, what was it like? What did he, you know, what's happening? Hey, soon the redemption is going to come. So they knew about the Lord's coming there, and they eventually did see our Lord. And when he went down to Abraham's bosom, brought him up to the face of the earth. But Paul is saying that Christ is so much greater than Moses, as great as the heavens are above the earth, as great as God is compared to creature. And these people would still prefer to look at Moses and try to pit Moses against Christ, when Moses, everything he did was looking forward to Christ, loving Christ, waiting for the Redeemer. So who's this Moses that the Jews are speaking about? He's an anti-Moses. He's the Moses, not the true Moses. He's the Moses that wasn't looking forward to the Redeemer. He's the Moses that's full of pride. He's the Moses man who wants to be the Superman without the true God. But he's talking about how much greater. He goes, for the glory. He says, now, he says, they couldn't even look upon the face of Moses when he brought down the Ten Commandments. He says, but the glory of his countenance, which is made void of the Spirit, which is made void, first he says. Why does he say he was made void? Because the old covenant's no longer in effect. He says, that old covenant, which was glorious, and it was also to show people what sin is, why they were being condemned, what they needed to do to be redeemed, even though they couldn't be redeemed yet. And that was glorious, he goes, and that was made void, he says, of the Spirit, he says, and which is made void, how shall not the ministration of the Spirit be rather glory? For if the ministration of condemnation be glory, the old covenant, ministration of condemnation, making people aware of the fact of why they're under the death sentences, what types of sins they're committing that's putting them deeper under the death sentence, and what they need to do to get out of the death sentences to be forgiven, but at the same time could not have lifted them up out of that state till Christ came. He says, much more the ministration of justice abounded in glory of Christ when he came to give us true justification. So here, St. Paul superbly is speaking about how much greater the New Testament, New Covenant is. And which all the Old Testament prophets knew about it. They were waiting for that day. And when it came, 90% of the Jews rejected it. And now you have all the so-called Catholics rejected it also. and they're even going back into the camp of the Jews by saying such horrible, blasphemous, apostate things that the old covenant is still in effect and that the Jews are under a covenant who don't believe in Jesus. There's so many verses, that folks, if you ever even read the Bible with half of a goodwill, with one-tenth of a goodwill, you cannot hold on to some of those apostasies and heresies you're holding on to. It proves you're either not reading the Bible at all, or you're reading and twisting its words and changing its meanings. They can't bear to hear what I'm saying now, though. Most of them can't even bear to read it. Because when you say it to them, they say, well, you're misinterpreting, I don't want to hear it. So they put it out of their mind. And you'll notice in all these churches, they leave out these rough passages that condemn Jews and tells you how evil they were, or tells women to be subject to their husbands. Any of these modern-day heresies that are being held today are being lopped out of the Scriptures, or they're just ignoring them. All right, so that's what he's talking about in there. And Jesus was talking about how all the Old Testament prophets and all the saints look forward to his coming, which was the great day. And he says, now here you are, you people are looking upon me. And he says, and you're going to do to me just what your fathers did to the prophets, which is kill them. And he mentioned that. The other thing he's talking about in here too is about, he's refuting the apostate Jews' racism. Because Judaism, true Judaism under the Old Covenant, was never racist. Jews were the superior chosen race as far as it was to bring God's word, his ministrations to all mankind. But they were not to look down on Gentiles as if they were soulless beasts or worms. They were to lift them up to the glory of God and bring them into the revelation of the God of Israel. God was always working to convert people, all people, even in the Old Covenant, or Gentiles and Jews, even back then. That's why God sent Moses and Joseph and Abraham into Egypt to testify to the Egyptians. God was always wanting to convert Gentiles. Just read the Old Covenant. He says, my will is that every man should worship the God of Israel and offer up to come to the temple and pray and learn the true religion so they can save their souls. And he says, and if a Gentile should convert in the Old Covenant era, circumcise him and treat him as an Israelite and no longer as a Gentile. Spiritually is what it means. He can never change his race. But we're talking now in the Old Covenant, a spiritual Israelite was the faithful chosen of God. And at the same token, if a Jew was bad and he disobeyed God, they said, you're not even worthy to be called a Jew. Because our whole race was created to serve God, and when you don't serve God, you almost lose your whole racial characteristic, even though technically, strictly, he still is a Jew. You see? So God was always about converting people, no matter what. God's totally against racism. The reason God destroys races, and he has done that, is not because of their race. It's because of their faithlessness in God. So when a race becomes so evil in the eyes of God, he'll wipe out that whole race. Not because of their race, but because of their rebellion against God and their multiple abominations. When they fill up their cup of abominations, God destroys them. But not because of their race, but because of the predominance of their evil beliefs within the society. Now, the current day Talmudic Jews, and you read the Talmud, they look upon Gentiles as soulless beasts that have no souls. A Gentile is no different than a horse. And they say, and if you have a good horse, feed him and keep him, he'll get some good work done. But that's all you really are in the eyes of that Talmudic Jew. Now, that's modern Judaism is Talmudic Judaism. It's not true Judaism. And this is when J.P. II, apostate anti-pope John Paul II, and the Vatican II Church comes along and praises this Judaism. They're praising an apostate false religion that is a complete antithesis of Catholicism, a complete denial of Christ, full of blasphemies against Catholicism and against true Judaism, even under the Old Covenant, because Catholicism is the continuation of Judaism. Catholicism is now the only religion but a new covenant that took the place of Judaism and fulfilled and carried on all the good laws. So that when you talk about the Judaism of today, it's not true Judaism, it's Talmudic Judaism. And within that Talmud, they directly attack Christ, the new covenant, the Blessed Virgin Mary, and they believe Gentiles are soulless beasts. So that you can treat them however you want. That's why they say in their Talmud, they say the Ten Commandments in treating your neighbor only applies to those who have souls. Us Jews. The Gentiles have no souls, so the Ten Commandments don't apply to them. You can cheat them, you can steal from them, you can murder them if you can get away with it. Don't get caught by the authorities, but murder them by secret if you could. You can fornicate with them, and you have not fornicated at all, because they have no souls. You're not guilty of adultery when you go with a Gentile woman, or you go with a Gentile man. They created multiple sins of such impurities, you know, and when they would go out and do it, they would do it with a clean, so-called, a false conscience, really, because their Talmud teaches them they're soulless beasts. The Ten Commandments does not apply to the Gentiles. Just read their Talmud. I lived with Jews, folks. I am a Jew, too, but I'm a Catholic Jew. And that's why I know a little bit more about them because I got close to them. But I know it. I was close enough to them to know what the way they believe. They didn't like me neither. They hate a Jew worse who converts. They even treat him like dirt. They say he's dead. He's not even a Jew anymore. Oh, yeah, and according to your definition of Jew, no, I'm not. I'm not a Jew then. I'm not because I'm not faithless. We really are. A true good Catholic's really a true Jew. But I lived with these Jews. I see how they treat the Gentiles. I see what they do. It's true. Every one of them is almost everyone. I will not say everyone. There may be some Jews out there that don't like that. Fine. Maybe they got some goodwill and can repudiate these monstrous things that are against the natural law even. These are injustices that are against the natural law even. God said even the pagan on the island should know you should treat your fellow man as you would want to be treated. But the Talmud doesn't teach that. You see? And Jesus is refuting this in the gospel today. When the one guy's saying, who's my neighbor? Why is he saying that to Jesus? Here's an example of a man who's already infected with the heresy of Talmudic Judaism, that who's my neighbor? I think it's only just another Jew. And Jesus says, no. And he says, there's a man who's sick on the road, and here he is, and he needs help. He doesn't even say what kind of a man, just any man. And the two Jews are walking down that road. And you can fix it. Why the Jews aren't, you can always put this in your mind. First, the priest comes by, the Levitical priest. And he looks at the man and goes, he ain't a Jew. I ain't going to help him. He's not my neighbor. And then the Levite, who's also of the tribe of Levi, but not of the priestly order, probably maybe a doorkeeper or had one of those other jobs amongst the tribe of Levi, he does the same thing. Then the Samaritan, who was really like the schismatic, you know, amongst them, he was in trouble as far as not having a real faith. And he was in schism, but he's the one who went and helped the guy and said he was more of a neighbor, even though he's not of the true faith, than you people who profess the true faith. Because you're getting an example of some of the arrogance of the Jews at that time. That my neighbor is only another Jew. Racism. That's what the Talmud is imbibed with. The Jew, you read it, the Jew ultimately, when he's looking at the Gentile, he's not going to let you know that. He's not stupid. But I will tell you one thing, when he starts to get very powerful, he will let you know it. I see what the Jews believe. When they get power over you, boy, they want to rub it in your nose. And that, wait till people are going to see the true nature of this apostate Jew. Now, there may be some Jews out there that don't believe in this, and there's more hope for them. But I would say, until you get rid of this racism that's taught in the Talmud and the other abominations in there, there's no hope for you. That's a natural law kind of a thing, that you should treat somebody like that. Jesus saying the guy who came and helped him is the actual one who is his neighbor. But here's the first, you get in the inklings of a Talmudic racist Jew in here. Why should I help that man? He's not a Jew. I don't care about him. He's a soulless beast Gentile. People always say that a Jew will work you till you're dead, and then when you can't move no more, he'll get the blood out of the stone, and when there's no more blood out of the stone, he'll throw you out the back door and pull another Gentile in the front and work him to death. The Jew is a tyrant. The apostate Jew I'm talking about. I lived with them. I know how they think. I worked with them. I spoke to them. I know how they are. I'm telling you that that's the way they act. All right? Anybody who's been around them long enough knows how they are. And this is a vicious, vicious heresy that's taught in their Talmud. And John Paul II comes along and says they're our elder brothers. He says that filthy, dirty religion is intrinsic to Catholicism. And that they're under a covenant with God. And that they're God's chosen people and they're pleasing to God. Folks, just read what the Talmud teaches. I have it on my website. You can pick up any Talmud and what they believe in. It's really enough for you just to know that they don't believe Jesus is God. They believe he was... Some people may lie to you and say, I think he was just a nice guy and a prophet. Well, he couldn't have been. Just a nice guy and a prophet. Because if that's all he couldn't be nice then, because he claimed to be God. He'd have to be either insane or he'd have to be a liar or a lunatic. It's lunatic or a liar is what they usually say. If you're going to try to tell me he was just a good guy. Because he didn't claim just to be a prophet. He claimed to be God. The Talmud is loaded down with blasphemies. It's loaded down with denials of Catholicism. It's loaded down with pagan rituals that they picked up in Babylon. It's full of what you would call witchcraft. And even worse is their Kabbalah, which people are really now getting into, which is the mystical side of Talmudic Judaism. Now, folks, have you ever heard anybody in the Vatican II Church or the traditional movement even condemning these things the way I am? To the high heavens? Oh no, they're going out and praying with these guys and saying, you're our brothers, and hugging one another. And as we always say, they really are brothers. They're spiritual bastards from God. We have two sets of apostate Jews, and then now we have apostate Catholics, and they're sleeping in the same bed of spiritual fornication. And they have the same traits, they share the same false beliefs, and they're under, and I even go further with the apostates Catholics and say they're quadruply cursed. If the Jews were doubly cursed for the blood of Christ, Apostate Catholics are quadruply cursed. Why? Because they had the blood of Christ on the altar and defiled it, spit against it, denied it. Even though they tell you they didn't, they have, because they denied the faith. And the minute you can go out and start justifying this filthy religion of Talmudic Judaism and these apostate Jews, you're in the deepest pits of hell along with these people, and you don't even have logic. Even a non-Catholic who doesn't believe in our religion, who has goodwill, would say, "Now, I'm not a Catholic, I don't believe in your religion, but I don't see how you two can believe it. You profess to believe in the same thing when one denies everything you profess you believe in. How could you both believe in the same thing? How could that be possible?" It's like somebody saying 2 plus 2 is 4 and 2 plus 2 is 5, and those both things are correct. Even a person of goodwill can see that this is false. That is to the point where in the traditionalist movement, these people are so afraid of the Jews. You can't even again get apostate Father Harrison to come out and tell me whether the Old Covenant is still in effect or not. He couldn't answer my question. He says it's a hard question. He's not quite sure. Oh, he knows what the answer is. He doesn't want to get the Jews angry. Who is he afraid of, Harrison? Who's he afraid of? Is he afraid of God? He's afraid of the Jew. He's afraid of the devil that possesses him. Because he made a pact with the devil. Because he wanted to be a famous theologian over in a pontifical university in Puerto Rico. Right? Instead of worrying more about the truth. But Christ in the gospel reading is talking about that. Now for you people who didn't read our gospel reading today, I'll just read it. And you'll hear him condemning the Talmudic Jewish racism here, he says. It is from Luke 10:23-37, and it says, "And behold, a certain lawyer stood up tempting Jesus and saying, 'Master, what must I do to possess eternal life?' But he said to him, 'What is written in the law? How thou readest it?' He answering said, 'Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with thy whole heart, with thy whole soul, and with thy whole strength, and with thy whole mind, and thy neighbor as thyself.'" True, that's the very best. That neighbor is thyself. And really, that's what the basis of the whole law is. And would you like that? Would you like to be stolen? People steal from you? Don't steal. Would you like somebody to commit adultery with your wife? Don't commit adultery with someone else's wife. Would you like someone to murder you? Then don't murder someone else. All these things that you have to consider. It's really basically simple. He's talking first, though, the first commandment is loving God and searching and seeking out the true God. But now, he's saying, the guy, this lawyer is telling him, "Oh yeah, I believe I got to love my neighbor as myself." And he said to him, "Thou hast answered rightly. This do, and thou shalt live." But he, willing to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Here comes a Talmudic Jew. "But who is my neighbor? I believe he's only a Jew. Because we're the chosen people, and God despises Gentiles. He hates all the Gentiles, doesn't want them to be saved. They're soulless beasts. That's not my neighbor. I can steal from him. I can murder him. I can rape his women. We can fornicate with the Gentile. We don't commit no sin because they're not humans." That's what they really believe, you see. "Who is my neighbor?" And then Jesus says, and Jesus answered, "A certain man went down." He says, a certain man. Doesn't say Jew, doesn't say Gentile. Could be anybody. So he's telling that Jew, it should be no concern to you what type of man this is. He doesn't say, go up and ask who that man is. He could be a Jew, he could be a Gentile, right? I'm presuming he was a Gentile because these guys didn't want to touch him. Or a Samaritan, a schismatic, or whatever. But they didn't want to touch him or even help him in his misery. Even a person who's a heretic, a schismatic, or a pagan, what's our job? Our first goal is to try to save them. Only do we kill them when they become very obstinate and threaten Catholicism to a high degree. Then they need to be killed, yes, justly. But until then, we've got to do in our power to keep them alive long enough so that they may convert and show them the mercy and truth and love of God. There is a point for killing them, yes, if they rise up and become very dangerous to Catholicism. But when you see somebody out there, you go, like I saw the guy in town, this one big guy, he was overweight, and he was an alcoholic, and he was dying. And I came in to help him. He died later on, but you can see the guy wasn't that much time. And the first thing I told him, he says, "Boy," I says, "I hate to see you die now. You're going to go to hell if you die." I says, "Look, I feel bad for you." I says, "Because the worst thing that's going to happen to you, if you die right now, you're going to go to hell. And you're going to be in worse pain than ever. You've got to believe in the true Christ. You've got to become Catholic." And he goes, "Please help me. I can't get up." So I had to drive him to the hospital in my car. And he was almost dying. I said, "Just say Jesus, Mary, and Joseph." And he started saying it. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. And I said, "Say Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, and they'll help you. And when they help you, promise that if you get better, you're going to ask, I'll help you. Call for me and I'll help you study." Well, I met him a couple of times. We went up to visit him. He got better and all that. I spoke to him, and he was rough, you know. The typical questions about not believing in God, or how could God allow this to happen, or why does God allow babies to die, and all kinds of stuff like that. I refuted all those things, and I gave him good answers. And I spent some time with him, but he never really totally came around. He ended up dying. Okay, so my whole point is, my main concern to that guy when I first saw him was, you know, he's going to go to hell. He's an unbeliever. I want to get him to live long enough At least, maybe God will even give him a miracle.
So he can convert.
Well, that's my concern, see? Right? These Jews are walking down, and here's a guy that he's hurt. Jesus isn't saying, it's just a man. They don't know whether he's a Jew or Gentile. My reason I think they looked at him and they're saying he's a Gentile is because they didn't want to go near him. That's the way some of those Jews believe, these Talmudic Jews. Now, there were certain rules with Gentiles, and even with us. You can't let them in your home to eat with them or socialize with them. That's another issue. But when you're out in the public, you guys still treat them as friendly, and you have to care about them, you know, because you want to care about the salvation of their soul. Anyway, the real fact that's going on here, Jesus is telling us what happened when this man fell into trouble and he was hurt and he was on the side of the road. It says, and Jesus answered and said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers who also stripped him. You know, I'll go even further. What do we got today? The Jew that ignored this guy that was hurt, he probably is the one that robbed him too and stripped him. They became so bad, the Jew doesn't only walk by the guy anymore. He says, I'll rob you, I'll strip you, and then I'm going to walk by you. That's what the current day Jew does. He's so evil. He says, hey, that's the guy we just robbed and stripped. Let's get out of here, you know. I mean, that's what modern day, that's how bad they are, most of them, a lot of them, you know. Now, I'm not saying all of them. There's some Jews of goodwill out there that don't like some of this stuff. So I'm saying, wake up, you Jews of goodwill, wherever you may be, and come into the true Catholic Church, because we're the only one that's teaching about the true, merciful, and just God. Now, it says, this guy fell in amongst robbers, and he was wounded, and leaving him half dead. And it chanced that a certain priest went down the same road, a Levitical priest, and seeing him pass by, he's a Gentile, I ain't going to help him, he's a soulless beast. In like manner the Levite, when he was near the place, saw him and passed by. But a certain Samaritan, who that time was a schismatic, not a real believer, he had his own problems. You know, that is, in other words, that would be like a non-Catholic going out and helping somebody, and we Catholics don't. He'd put us to shame in the natural law, because helping people like that is a natural law thing, Jesus is saying. Even pagans are bound to do that by the natural law upon their hearts. So if us Catholics don't do it, we're making a mockery out of the Catholic religion and making the true God look bad. He says, but a certain Samaritan, being on his journey, came near him and seeing him, was moved with compassion, and going up to him, bound up his wounds, pouring oil and wine, sending him upon his own beast, and brought him to the inn and took care of him. And the next day, he took out 2 pence and gave it to the host and said, take care of him, and whatever thou shalt spend over and above, I at my turn will repay thee. And he says, which of these, in thy opinion, was neighbor of him that fell among the robbers? But he said, he that showed mercy to him. So he's saying, there's the one guy who really showed mercy. See? So, now, and another thing don't be fooled about today, a lot of these Jews know about that, because when they've been living under a Catholic society, that they will go out and do some outward acts of helping even Gentiles, but they don't do it with the right motive. They're doing it to deceive you. I know that. Because when you really need them, and when they're not, and when they can get away with shortchanging you, or murdering you, or slighting you, or stealing from you, they will. Believe me, folks, they will. When it comes to public things, they may go out there and say, look, we helped this nice Gentile little nursery over here, and us Jews gave it a little bit of money. They only do that so you can believe that they're charitable towards Gentiles. In their heart of hearts, it's not so. And anybody who lives around Jews for any length of time knows what I'm saying is true. They really do look down on Gentiles as soulless beasts, most of them. Now, I'm not saying all of them, but most of them do. It's taught in the religious, false religious book of the Talmud, that filthy book, that John Paul II, apostate anti-pope John Paul II, received a copy of it and embraced it, because I believe firmly he was a Talmudic Jew. And at the same time, he's preaching out of his other side of his mouth about all these virtuous things about the moral laws. He didn't even do that real well at all, neither. He let the homosexuals run wild and never really blasted them out of the water. Neither did the rat man. Apostate anti-pope Ratzinger, when he came to New York and Australia, he's not condemning homosexuality to the rooftops. Condemning it from the rooftops. They even teach now it's okay if you are a homo as long as you don't commit the act. That's a heresy, because even if you think homo thoughts, and the minute you say you're a homo, you already committed a mortal sin for even saying such a stupid thing. What person, anybody who really is afflicted with that sin should be ashamed of himself and not want to even say that, you know? But you're around boasting of it, that means you're thinking about it. And you see, the sin starts in the thought of your mind. But here, Jesus is refuting the Talmudic Jew, the racism of the Talmudic Jew, in which he doesn't want to help the other people. Not really. Now, you get other Jews out there that are going to pretend they want to help you, but it's for their own selfish purposes. Don't be deceived. They will pretend they want to have all the Gentile nations and kings serving them, but no more than you would have a horse or a pig serving you on a farm. That's really the way they're looking at you. They're being nice to you. They're doing things to gather your support and your help. But in the end, that's the way they really look at you, the Talmudic Jew and the Kabbalistic Jew. Now, I'm saying to you Jews that are even believing in these foolish, racist theories, you better get rid of that first and foremost, or you're never going to be able to see the light of the gospel and the truth of God. Your God is a vicious God. Your small g God, Satan. He hates mankind. Jesus chose your race to make the God of Israel manifest, not just to your own people, but to be a beacon of light to all nations. All right? And to convert Gentiles in the old covenant era. And then when the new covenant era came, there was no longer that distinction of Jew and Gentile. God opened up the positions of hierarchy and leadership to even the Gentiles to prove. Now we're in a new era. The Jews lost their supremacy as far as leadership positions and priesthoods in the covenant. It's now shared between Jews and Gentiles. All right? But get rid of your racism. Even St. John the Baptist says, don't think that just because you're a Jew, you're going to be saved. That don't mean nothing. God can turn that rock right in front of me into a Jew. Hey, that was just a rock. Yeah, now it's a Jew, so what do you think about that? You know? I mean, the most important thing is which makes you a true Jew, is what we say, or a true faithful, is the faith. And during the New Covenant era, that's Catholicism. That's why Catholics, Jew and Gentile, are what we call the true Jews or the true Israelites. And in the Old Covenant era, if you didn't believe in the God of Israel, there was no salvation. The God of Israel was evangelizing. Why do you think he sent his prophets and he sent Joseph into Egypt he had even become prisoner and he was taken in as a prisoner into Egypt at the same time he got to witness to them. Daniel went into Babylon. They went into Syria. There's nobody in the whole known world at that time, of that area, that didn't know about the God of Israel. God was always, always, always trying to convert people, Jew and Gentile, even in the Old Covenant earth. So I guess this is a sermon to let you people be aware also of the true racism of the Talmudic Jew. The only reason you should be proud in a good way of yourselves is if you're a good Catholic. That's the only person that can really be good in the New Covenant era, a good Catholic. Everyone else is rotten to the core, whether you know it or not. I don't care how good you look on the outside. You're full of filthiness on the inside. That's the way God sees you. Now, if you have goodwill, and you're listening to what I'm telling you, get away from these Jews and don't listen to them. The Messiah that they're bringing to power is the anti-Messiah. The Moses they speak about is the anti-Moses. The Judaism they talk about is anti-Judaism because it already ended. They are not under a covenant with God. They are under a covenant with Satan. There's only one religious covenant in effect at any time, and one God and one church. Now, you people better stop making a choice, and you better stop making it quick. And I appeal to a lot of the Jews out there who I know God is working on their hearts right now. Because God says we are going to convert Jews. And I believe there's quite a few goodwill Jews out there. I don't know who they are. My preaching is for them. To get away from your apostate brothers that you're in communion with. To look at some of the filthy things that's taught in that Talmud of yours. The silly, stupid, dumb things. And even worse, the Kabbalah, which is the actual outward practicing of witchcraft. These guys who are doing Kabbalah are warlocks. Just look at the thing and read it. And then open up a manual to witchcraft and you're looking at the same thing. Even the Talmud itself has the same stuff. They picked up this garbage from Babylon and these other pagan nations when they went in there. Because once they rejected Christ, they became perverse. I say this many times. When God turned away from Saul and no longer spoke to Saul because he was disobedient to God and because he did not have a repentant heart to turn back to God, and he became worse and worse and more jealous against David, and what did he do? Instead of repenting and sitting down and waiting patiently for God to return to him, he continued to rebel. And then in spite of all his rebellions, he was still angry because God wasn't speaking to him. He wasn't getting any supernatural revelations from God. So where did Saul go to get his revelations from? The witch of Endor, a witch. Because he wanted to get something from the other world and because God was no longer speaking to him. The current day Jews that rejected Christ no longer have and do not have the supernatural revelations from God. And all men yearn for that. And you're either going to get it from the true God or you're going to go to Satan and get it from him through his multiple false religions. So the current day Jews, instead of accepting the true God and his supernatural revelations, turned over like Saul did to the devil, and they went to him for advice and his preternatural revelations and his help from the other world. And that's where they're getting it from. Just read that Talmud. Just read that Kabbalah. You've got to be blind if you cannot see the comparisons between that and witchcraft. And you've got to be blind if you don't see the blasphemies against our God, the true God, who is the God of Israel. The Catholic God is the God of Israel. You can't claim to say you believe in the God of Israel and reject the Catholic God. Because the God of Israel is the Catholic God. You see? You can't claim to believe in Moses, but not believe in Jesus. Because Moses spoke of Jesus and prepared the way for Jesus. Okay, so This is a little sermon for all you people out that are being deceived by these Jews, and for these Jews themselves to wake up before it's too late and to come into the true church. You want to, the true God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is found only in the Catholic Church, and He's the Catholic God. And we at Mary's Little Remnant are the only ones that are preaching Him in the whole world that I know of at this moment. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Amen.
This recording was produced by Mary's Little Remnant, 302 East Joffrey Street, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, 87901-2878, and can be accessed on my website at www.johnthebaptist.us.